is the Rob Carson Show. Are you ready to be podsmacked? Now, here's Rob Carson.
And here is episode number 147 of the Rob Carson Show podcast. If you're keeping track, welcome to the show, guys. Glad to have you joining me today. A loaded show. And something very exciting for those who are tuning in today for the very first time on the podcast radio network. Welcome. I hope that you will welcome me. This is your podcast radio network, and I am a new interloper. So I'm going to be here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 5 o'clock Central Standard Time. And we hope to maybe make that into the entire week, Monday through Friday, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. My show is about politics, pop culture, personal experience. You're going to hear some observational humor and some comedy as well. I'm a talk show host. I do shows around the country on big radio stations like WLS in Chicago and WBAP in Dallas from my home studio. I also do live Facebook video podcasts, and then, of course, I do a recorded podcast. And I'm also a nationally syndicated comedy writer. All right? My comedy is heard around the country on a lot of different radio stations, hundreds of them actually, including the stations that carry the Rush Limbaugh program, because I started writing for Rush political satire right out of college. All right. So there you go. That's a little bit about me. And it is an honor and a privilege to be here on the podcast radio network. By the way, if you want to download my daily podcast, iTunes, Rob Carson Show. All right. Just look iTunes. Rob Carson Show. I'm on a lot of other places. There's TuneIn. There's Google Play, Google Plus, Audio Boom, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio. I would prefer you go to iHeartRadio or to iTunes and just download it there. It's free. Before we get into the show, and I've got a ton of stuff we're going to get to, some political, some not so much, national stuff. I think you're going to enjoy it. I want to mention a friend of mine who has a terrific chiropractic practice in Kansas City, 8335 North Congress Avenue in Kansas City, Dr. Alex Nelson. He does decompression for herniated low back discs. I cannot tell you how much a difference that makes in your life, man. He does treats neuropathy, back pain, low back pain, shoulder pain, carpal tunnel, all of these things. FountainOfLifeChiro.com. FountainOfLifeChiro.com. The number 816-741-4711, 816-741-4711. Also, Grassmasters KC, they do these terrific zero-turning radius mowers. Two manufacturers, Hustler out of Kansas, with the Fast Track, which is a commercial mower, a four-year, 400-hour warranty. Unbelievable, up to a 60-inch deck. Just terrific stuff. And then, of course, the Dixie Chopper made in Indiana. I've got a Silver Eagle in my garage. That is a commercial mower, and literally, I've got a third of an acre. It takes me about 12 minutes to mow my yard. Grassmasters KC.com, 5520 Raytown Road, Raytown Mo. Grassmasters KC.com. Well, Al Gore's Inconvenient sequel has met with a cool box office reception. 15th at the box office this year. All right. This was not supposed to happen, according to writer D.R. Tucker in the Washington Monthly. Al Gore gets ripped off again. He said Paramount had botched the nationwide release with its two-weekend platform strategy instead of launching, seizing on anti-Trump momentum to whip up enthusiasm with a splashy one-weekend launch. That's a load of crap. I said, here's what happened. People realized that the inconvenient truth was a lie. That everything that happened in the first movie, everything that was supposed to happen by now, that the first movie espoused, none of it happened. It was a load of crap, and Al Gore got bigger and fatter. And Al Gore has three mansions. The one in Nashville consumes up to 34 times what an average home does. He is a let-them-eat-cake liberal. That's what he's all about. The ice is still on the North Pole and the South Pole, all right? It's a load of crap. Sadly, the box office underperformance of the Inconvenient sequel will be seized upon by climate change deniers as proof that Americans don't care about the issue. This according to this D.R. Tucker. No, we know it's a lie, and we won't be fooled again. Prominent climate skeptic Anthony Watts has already dubbed the movie an inconvenient bomb. Mr. Gore himself raised expectations by urging activists to buy tickets and pack theaters in order to send a message to the Trump administration as he's flying around with his private jets and the carbon footprint. He's so concerned about the atmosphere. Dear Lord in heaven. Mr. Gore himself raised expectations by, I already said that. White House said that American people are committed to climate action no matter what they do, say, or tweet. That's what Al Gore says about the White House. So the sequel still has time to find an audience. Paramount plans to ramp up the number of screens next weekend to 500. Nobody's going to see it. It's a giant flaming load of crap. We all know it now. It's been exposed. Many states are preparing for a historic eclipse like a natural disaster. Did you hear about this? You getting ready? Are you going to be watching it? Well, I'm right in the middle of the path of this thing. I live near Kansas City, Missouri. And right in the middle of this thing is when it's going to happen. But the eclipse path of totality, where the moon will almost block the sun, covers a 70-mile-wide lane that will cut across 12 states from Oregon to South Carolina. 12 million people in the eclipse path. Another 1.8 to 7.4 million people going to be traveling to path to see it. What they're concerned about is crowded highways, financial damage, excess costs of cleanup and property damage. You know, these eclipse viewers, they're partying their asses off, you know. By the way, the thing I think lasts about 2 minutes and 45 seconds. I mean, it's going to be a little bit dark, but the totality is going to be very short-lived. Orrin Hatch apparently used an X-rated phrase, didn't realize that that it was X-rated. Orrin Hatch is an 80-year-old senator from Utah. He's a Republican. And he said, we're not going back to the health care issue. We're in tax now. Told the Politico, as far as I'm concerned, they shot their wad on health care, and that's the way it is. I'm sick of it. Many people rushed to social media to let the senator know that it was a crude term for ejaculation. Oh, Orrin Hatch is 83, by the way. He was referring to what it meant when you had flintlock rifles. There was a wad in there that separated the charge from the projectile. And I guess Orrin maybe was, in his younger days, used one. But that's what he said. Got some political stories I want to get to. Chelsea Handler, she's such a damn... I'm sorry, guys. I mean, when comedians become vitriolic politicos, they're just not fun anymore. That goes with Stephen Colbert. He's just a dick. And Chelsea Handler is the same way. She's having an implosion because Donald Trump is a presidency. She said over the weekend she advocated for European-inspired laws that restrict freedom of expression. She has 7.5 million Twitter followers, believe it or not, and Sunday said that Americans should adopt laws that penalize individuals who laugh at racist jokes, a comment that didn't sit well with her audience, which noted the irony of an American comedian pushing for added restrictions to the First Amendment. Quote, she said, two Chinese guys were arrested in Berlin for making Nazi salutes. Wouldn't it be nice to have laws here for people who think racism is funny? Comedians Against the First Amendment deadpanned that folks like Chelsea Handler ride the legal coattails of freedoms won by folks like Lenny Bruce, then demand their contemporaries are arrested. True. Ben Shapiro said, sure, the thing is, you're as much of a fascist as the guys throwing up the Nazi salute. Absolutely true. It is remarkable. It is remarkable that somebody who, I mean, you're making your living off the First Amendment. I mean, it's the most important thing for what you do, and you can be offensive because the First Amendment protects offensive speech above all others. What a dimwit. What an absolute dimwit. Got a few political stories I want to get to. Maxine Waters won't rule out an all-black party. Maxine Waters is a race baiter. Maxine Waters doesn't even live in the district she represents. She lives in a $4.5 million home. She won't explain exactly how the hell she got the house. And she's a race baiter. She's a harpy. She was on a radio program called The Breakfast Club. The Breakfast Club. And it's one of those urban shows that, you know, it's, you know, part of an urban group owner of radio stations, which means basically if you're a black or if you're a white person, you need not apply. As far as talent is concerned, you need not apply. Here is Maxine Waters not ruling out the possibility, and this is where they're going, of an all-black political party.
Do you think black people should start their own political party?
Should do what?
Should start their own political party.
No, not at this point. You've got to show that you're willing and you're able to put the numbers together and exercise your influence. We still are not voting our influence yet. I think what we should do is...
And you're not doing it anytime soon. Okay, it's just not going to happen. The Democrat Party isn't good at motivating its voters to get out and vote, particularly in inner cities, because their promises are always broken.
Organize our power, exercise our power, particularly in the Democratic Party, because that's where most of us are.
Yeah, about 97%.
We should go to the conventions. We should be delegates. We should run for office, do all of that, and then you can raise that kind of question, whether or not we're strong enough to talk about organizing another party.
Okay, so they're going to do a black party. So a party, and I want you to think about how nonsensical this is. You are going to do a black party, which is for black people. They are going to, blacks in the country, around, 10% of the population, African-American? What sort of power do you suppose nationally a party that represents 10% of Americans is going to have? Probably not a whole lot, unless it's, I don't know, maybe taking votes from the Democrat Party. Yeah, really, right? Am I right? She went on as she continued talking to the Breakfast Club, talking about Donald Trump. And how he is going to be removed from office.
For some of us who saw that this was a deplorable human being early on in the campaign.
Now, of course, there are plenty of deplorables in the Democrat Party. Bill Clinton, most notably, who she served under, he wasn't deplorable, though.
Where he mimicked and mocked a disabled journalist.
She really needs to get over this crap. He's the president.
Journalists talked about grabbing women by their private parts, stalked Hillary Clinton.
Stalked Hillary Clinton? What?
About his colleagues, Little Rubio, called them names, etc.
And he knocked each one of them out of the primary process and became the nominee.
We believe that he certainly should not be president and right. Did not think he would be president.
Well, he won, Sunshine.
But we knew that this was a man with no good values. And so when he became president, of course, we were shocked.
What are your values? I mean, honestly, $4.3 million mansion living woman who's been in Washington for 40 plus years. What are your values, Pookie? What have you done to improve the lot of your constituents?
We were surprised. But I started right then talking about he should be impeached because not only the way that he conducted himself.
You can't be impeached for things that happened before he was elected.
During the campaign, but we learned.
You can't be impeached for that, you bone!
Learned a lot about his allies and his associates who had
ties. Here, she's going to get vague. She's going to get really vague here. Here you go.
Ties to Russia and to the Ukraine and to oil. And so I knew that this was someone who had been involved with collusion.
Okay, again, she's speaking in vagaries. She never says anything specific. As far as collusion with oil and natural and fossil fuels, he is starting to send natural gas to Poland, so Poland doesn't have to rely on Russia anymore. He's unleashing the fossil fuel industry in the United States, which is going to harm Russia even more. You're speaking nonsense, and this is what she does. She speaks nonsense. Here she is talking about when we can expect Donald Trump to be out of office or impeached.
Mm. Now, let's see what Putin has on him, because, you know, there are allegations about a dossier that may be available and other kinds of things.
Is that like the one that the dossier that said that Donald Trump stayed in a hotel room in Moscow where Obama had stayed and had prostitutes piss in the bed? That didn't happen.
But I believe it is possible to impeach him. How long is it going to take? I don't know, but I give it to about December.
You good luck with that, Sunshine, because you got about 3 months to do it. This is one of the reasons why the Democrat Party has no message. This is one of the reasons why the Republicans have the most gubernatorial seats in the country since, I believe, it was 1922. I believe the number right now is 32 governors are Republicans. And massive amounts of seats in state legislatures, certainly in the Congress, have been lost because the Democrat Party didn't have a message. And Maxine Waters has a nonsensical message to impeach a president for things that he did during the campaign, I guess. I honestly can't make this stuff up. Morning, Joe. Monday morning, the 8th or the 7th, had Dan Ball, such a great name, the Washington Post Chiefs correspondent. You know, I met a guy yesterday named Creighton. At a broadcast seminar, I was teaching some students. His name was Creighton. I said, wouldn't it be cool if your last name was Beryl? Creighton Beryl. He didn't think it was funny. Anyway, Dan Ball's Washington Post talked about the terrible shape that the Democrat Party is going to be coming up in the 2018 election. And I got to tell you, I agree.
The National Democratic Party, Nick, is, as you know, is in many ways defined as a bi-coastal party and not as a national party. I mean, it's strong on the coast, and the leadership.
This is why Hillary Clinton lost.
Tends to come from the coast, and the message tends to come from the coast. That doesn't necessarily play as well through many of these states that are going to be up for grabs in 2017, 2018, for 2018 in particular. So there's the absence of a kind of a message that resonates in some of these states.
Well, no. I mean, doesn't impeach Trump resonate in all of the states in the middle of the country that voted overwhelmingly for Trump?
I think also the fact is that there is no bench in a lot of these states for the Democrats. They've been wiped out in the state legislatures.
Yep.
They've been wiped out in many statewide races in some of these states. And so they struggle to find an attractive candidate who they can put up for a statewide race like the governor's race. So, I mean, one thing plays on the other, and over the last 8 years, it has been a wipeout. Now, partly that's been because there have just been two terrible midterm elections in 2010 and 2014, and most of the gubernatorial races are in those midterm years. So, if you look back 8 years ago, the Democrats actually had a majority of the governorships, but under President Obama, they got wiped out, and the absence of a bench makes it all the more difficult to find the right kind of candidates who can win in those states.
Now, the Democrats' new platform, I guess, and I believe wasn't it 1922 or so that Franklin Delano Roosevelt came up with the New Deal. And a couple weeks ago, the Democrat Party came out with, I guess it's called that, like the Improved Deal or. But it's a throwback to 1932, and it's the exact same thing that Roosevelt proposed. Massive infrastructure spending. That was what the Interstate Highway Program was about. That was what the Hoover Dam was all about, all right? The WPA, and they're doing it all over again. And then, of course, raising the minimum wage. Raising the least that you can make to a number that's a little higher. it's just amazing. I mean, it really, really is. Coming up, transgender camp. Transgender camp for kids as young as 4 years old. And a university president has a rebuke for what universities have become. We will share the story. Oh, yes. And of course, I don't know if you knew this, Baltimore came up with an event to stop the violence over the weekend called the Nobody Kill Weekend. You want to guess how long it lasted before someone was killed? I'll share the details coming up in just a couple of seconds. By the way, if you want to download the podcast, iTunes, just look for Rob Carson Show. If you would download, I would greatly appreciate it. And if you would share on social media, all right, if you like what you've heard so far, you new listeners to the podcast radio network in this time slot, If you're just tuning in, my name is Rob Carson. I'm a radio host, podcaster. I do live video podcasts as well, and also a nationally syndicated comedy writer. So my show is politics, pop culture, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And we're going to get through a whole bunch of stuff here. The fear-mongering that's out there with regard to Donald Trump continues. MSNBC guest on Monday asserted that Donald Trump's name is becoming a modern-day swastika for Islamophobic people. All right, this guy is Dean Obadala, said basically that since Donald Trump has become elected, his name has become a swastika. Wait for it.
Today, and he was saying that the relations that they enjoy with the community are generally strong.
Sure.
You know, Muslims have been in America for a long time. There's in some of these areas, there's slightly newer communities. Mm-hmm. Some of them are first generation. And he feels that the community's not hostile toward them.
And that's a great thing. And you saw that. I saw immediately that within hours of the attack, the leaders of different faith communities standing up and saying, we're with you. This mosque, according to local media reports, they did get some emails and hate mail before. Just a week ago, another Muslim cemetery in the Minneapolis suburb.
By the way, most of these crimes are fake. We heard that there were community centers, Jewish community centers, and synagogues getting death threats. Turned out to be from two people. One, a black guy from St. Louis, is a liberal, a Democrat, and one from a guy from Europe.
Was vandalized with swastikas, graffiti. Since January, we've had five mosques burned down in America by arson. That's according to the police. We've had swastikas written on mosques. We've had the word Trump painted on mosques in New Jersey.
Okay. Now, why would somebody paint the word Trump on a mosque in New Jersey? To intimidate because they're Trump voters, or to pin the blame on Trump voters? I would venture to say, surely, to pin the blame on Trump voters. You've got groups called the Antifa, or Antifa, whatever they are, they're fascists, who show up at Trump rallies and commit acts of violence and then blame it on the Trump people. You think that people like that who would show up at Trump rallies during the election process to start fights wouldn't spray paint a mosque with the word Trump on it? You think that people who call Donald Trump and Steve Bannon and other members of administration Nazis wouldn't do whatever they could, even if it involved threats and intimidation, to pin the blame on the opposition, which is Donald Trump?
Iowa, New York, for some, the word Trump is becoming a modern-day swastika.
Unbelievable. If this were said about anybody else, it would be considered an outrage. And I got to tell you, it's bullcrap. It's dog whistle. And it is sickening. And there was a lot of fear-mongering during the election that worked people into a lather. There were many people of color who thought it was the end of the world. There were many immigrants who thought it was the end of the world. And they capitalized on fear, and they inflated it, and they used inflammatory rhetoric like this to incite and create a fear that otherwise shouldn't have been there. Oh, one other Trump note. Did you hear the letter that Sarah Huckabee Sanders read last week during a press conference at the White House? Little boy identifies himself as Dylan. Said that everybody called him Pickle. It was a cute, cute letter. And apparently the Washington Post confirmed it was sent by a 9-year-old, Dylan Harbin of California. Well, Dylan apparently asked for a Donald Trump cake for his birthday. His mother had to make it for him herself because she couldn't find a bakery willing and able to do it. Michael Ferris, president, CEO, general counsel to the Alliance Defending Freedom, the Christian legal group defending Jack Phillips, a Colorado baker who was sued by a gay couple for declining to make their gay wedding cake. He wonders whether bakers are allowed to decline the same birthday cake supporting Mr. Trump, but not wedding cakes supporting same-sex marriages. Similarly, cake shops declined Pickle's order for conscience reasons, yet no one on the left is calling for legal action against the cake shops, and neither should anyone on the right. Now, if this would have been an Obama cake, they would have been called racist haters. The owner of Master Peak cake shop in Lakewood, Colorado. Mr. Phillips declines to make cakes that go against his Christian beliefs, including those for bachelor parties or Halloween. For refusing to make the same-sex wedding cake, he was ordered by the state Civil Rights Commission to undergo re-education, which is should be considered terrifying, change his store policies, and file quarterly compliance reports for 2 years. But somebody can say, we're not going to do, because of conscience, your Donald Trump cake. Professor at the University of Georgia letting students decide their own grades if they feel unduly stressed. I was talking to a friend of mine today, and she's not in broadcasting, but this was the story. This was the story that she was talking about. This is the one that she was sharing on social media. The stress reduction policy is outlined in the online syllabi for two of Richard Watkins' fall business courses, data management and energy informatics. Quote, if you feel unduly stressed by a grade for any assessable material or the overall course, you can email the instructor indicating what grade you think is appropriate, and it will be so changed. Are you out of your frigging mind, man? No explanation is required, but it is requested that you consider waiting 24 hours before emailing the instructor. So you got to kind of calm down. Maybe give a chance for your Paxil to kick in. You know, maybe you can get to your safe space in time with your teddy bear and your Play-Doh and your coloring books. The stress policy also says tests and exams will be open book and open notes, including the use of material on your laptop. This is un-effing real. Well, what's the point in even learning it? What's the point in even going to class? Give students permission to request to discontinue all further group work. Have one's grade determined totally on non-group work. Listen, I hated group work in college. And to me, group work is the definition of socialism. And the reason being is your compensation is a good grade, right? You are all going to share in a good grade. But there are some who will work, and there are some who will sit back and let the others work. The same thing goes with socialism or communism. The outcome is always the same for the bourgeois. The proletariat, they live by a different set of rules, but the bourgeois, you're all going to get the same amount of money. Some of you are going to bust your asses, and some of you are not. That's the first time I experienced socialism was in college. Only positive comments about presentations will be given in class, the policy continues, so they're not going to criticize presentations of students in class. Only positive. You're doing a great job. Comments designed to improve future presentations will be communicated by email. So it's not a criticism. It's just designed to improve future presentations. We'll do that by email. The policy was designed to, quote, I just can't even believe this. I can't believe it. To preempt emotional reactions to stressful situations. While this policy might hinder the development of group skills and mastery of the class material, and I might say, make you fail in the real world, ultimately, these are your responsibility. It concludes, I will provide every opportunity for you to gain high-level mastery. I don't know how you do that by not assigning grades, changing grades when the kids need it, not doing group materials, allowing students to do open book or use material on your laptop to take tests, to not openly criticize presentations in class, but designed, presentations, or I should say criticisms that will improve future presentations communicated by email. How in the hell does somebody get better? These kids are going to be in a world of hurt. World of hurt when they get in the real world. Here's a university president I like. President of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, Dr. Everett Piper. He's penned an article called This Is Not Daycare. It's a University. I love this. This needs to catch fire. He was speaking to the Blaze Radio Network about this. Here's a few things that the president had to say about the snowflake generation and universities that allow things like what happened at the University of Georgia with this professor, or Evergreen State, or the University of Missouri to happen.
We've taught people to capitulate rather than to have courage. We've taught people that it's a safe space is more important than a place that makes you feel uncomfortable and actually causes you to want to grow. We've taught people that if they feel guilty when there's a sermon, that you ought to issue a trigger warning before you gave the sermon. This is ludicrous. This is lunacy. This is not good education. It's antithetical to the Liberal Arts Academy, which was established to educate us in liberty. Every American institution, if you go back a couple hundred years to the founding of our academy, every American university was
Where did all this come from? Where did this come from? Is it from the parents? Is it from the parents? Is it this generation of instructor? Is somebody giving some marching orders on this? Because I don't understand how universities have become giant daycare centers. I don't understand why this has happened. It used to be that you went to university and you were supposed to be excellent. It's the first time you were on your own. You get your ass to your class. If you fail, then you fail. If you fail profoundly, you get kicked out of the university and you are the shame of the family. Now you can make up your own grade. You can argue when you think you deserve a better one and get it.
Up a moral citizenry so that they understood how to confront these issues as a moral people, a people of righteousness and justice, of integrity. We were taught to be integrationists, not segregationists, to integrate head and heart and fact and faith and belief and behavior.
And now they're doing dormitories separated, African-American students, safe spaces, dormitories, Pacific Islanders, Hispanic, the new segregation. Where is this coming from?
We were taught that
it's the victim culture is what it is. It is a soft generation that has never experienced anything. They've never experienced a struggle. Their mommy and daddy have used hand sanitizer. They've worn bike helmets everywhere they go. And now they're in college.
Those things matter. C.S. Lewis said, don't be too easily satisfied with making mud pies in the back alley when you could have a holiday at the beach. We can't be too easily satisfied with comfort. We should be teaching character in the academy. And until we do, we're going to be a very confused and complacent people.
It's going to have to happen with alumni members saying this is bullcrap. It's going to have to happen with federal funding being pulled. I think if we haven't already, we're on the way to a breaking point with regard to academia and free speech. It's been exposed, and I think the lion's share of the American people think it's ludicrous, including parents who are sending their students off. And any parent who agrees with that professor that I mentioned earlier, you've done a really poor job as a parent. You've done a really, really poor job as a parent. If you got a kid going to school who needs a safe space, if you got a kid who has such a gigantic racial chip on his or her shoulder that they need to create some sort of atmosphere that says that despite the fact that with all the advances we've made in our culture, in our society, that in 2017, it's 1968 all over again. You've done a really poor job as a parent. You've raised a brat. You've raised a brat. Rainbow Day Camp, El Cerrito, California, is a day camp that caters to transgender children ranging in age from 4 years old to 12 years old. Now, this is... we have experienced a culture shift that is gigantic in the country. I don't know if it's catching on with some. It is. But a couple years ago, being transgendered was considered to be a mental illness. If you look the rate of suicide attempts among the transgendered, which hovers at around 45%, you would realize that it is a mental illness. You would realize that children are born with penises and vaginas. The penis generally represents a male. That's the way it's intended. There's a thing that happens, and it's called ejaculation and there's sperm, and then the girl has a vagina, and then up in there there's some eggs, and they get together, and then babies are made that way, you see. I don't know if everyone knew, you know that, but as long as if you're born with a vagina and a uterus, it's always going to be there unless you have it surgically removed. And even if that happens, you're still going to be female. And it's the same way with guys. You can have your pee-pee whacked off and you can have fake boobies and everything, but you're always going to be a dude. Mm-hmm. I know. What's really dangerous about this is that children, little children, they mimic other people. They do not have the judgment when things are shown as examples to make the right decision. They might go along with something because it's trendy or it's popular. That seems to be what's happening with the massive growth of kids as young as 4 years old claiming to be transgendered. I got a couple of sound bites from the tranny camp. From the AP.
At Rainbow Day Camp, kids sing silly songs, play ball, make art, and do wacky relay races. But what makes this summer program unique is the campers it serves. Transgender children, some as young as 4 years old.
If you send your kid to a transgendered camp at the age of four, it was hard to say. You might want to seek counseling.
It's a place where they can use the pronoun of their choice and meet other transgender kids and adults, including many of the camp counselors.
They're following their creative interests, and they don't have this added stress or weight of being othered. They get to be their most authentic selves and build community with other people who understand the same life experience.
And they also get very confused. And they also, at a very young age, I mean, I wanted to be a fireman, I'm sure, when I was 5 or 6 years old. It's confusing them. It's confounding them. It is a profound change that's being allowed to happen at an age when such a change should not happen. Here's a little more from the Rainbow Transgender Day Camp.
People aren't like, oh, they're more like, okay, that's cool. And then we just move on.
Transgender fluid.
Sandra Collins, a former college professor, started the program 2 years ago after she struggled to find a camp where her transgender daughter Scarlett would feel comfortable.
You know, I used to say that the camp began out of sadness because of this experience, but a friend encouraged me to reframe it, that the camp began out of love, out of trying to create a safe space for my daughter and then other kids.
Your daughter who has a penis.
Who were like her.
Enrollment has since tripled to 60 campers from California and beyond.
I like to be who I am, and it's not fun to be who I am not.
Experts say the camps...
I look at the kids here as the victims, to be quite honest. I really do. I look at the kids here to be victims. To their parents' lack of guidance and lack of maturity.
Both mirrors a sharp increase in transgender children across the country.
We are definitely seeing more kids. Many more kids socially transitioning.
Yeah, because more kids are seeing it and they're going, I want to try that.
At very young ages. And the reason we're seeing them more is because we're looking for them.
Because we're looking for them. And we might even be coaching them. Oh, yeah, you really? You kind of like that dress? Well, let's put it on. You're really, actually, I know you have a penis, but you're actually a girl. Yeah. One more cut from the Rainbow Transgender Summer Camp.
And letting them be found.
For critics who question whether preschool-age kids should be allowed to transition so early, developmental psychologist Diane Aronsav says children can identify their gender at a very young age.
Yeah. They look down and they go, huh.
We expect a two-year-old to know, I am boy, I am girl. So why can't that also apply to transgender children?
Banana.
Because you're a boy. Or you're a girl.
Molly Maxwell says that's what happened when her child was a toddler.
Once she learned to talk and have a voice, she was very insistent that she was not a boy, she was a girl, and to call her a girl.
James Kaplan's mom doesn't regret allowing her child to transition.
I had to mourn the loss of my daughter.
Oh, boy. I had to mourn the loss of my daughter. Well, she's still there, okay? She's just claiming to be a boy. And did you realize there's a large percentage of these kids who, after age 18 years old, choose to go with the gender they were born with?
And at the same time, welcome my son and get to know him. And
this woman is, I mean, mentally ill.
As soon as he transitioned, he was happier. He was confident.
And building confidence and community is what Rainbow Day Camp is all about.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? When my mom got me the little plastic fireman's hat, I was happy. It made me really happy to have that fireman's hat because I was identifying as a fireman when I was 6 years old. Maybe your kid can identify as an astronaut. You get them a little space suit. They'll be happy. They'll be happy. Oh, coming up, Philadelphia. They got this new sweetened beverage tax. The real truth about it. And how it's making, are you ready for this? It's making non-alcoholic beverages cost more than alcoholic beverages. You're not going to believe what's happening in Philadelphia. So, a couple of things happening in Baltimore over the weekend. And one thing, there's a man in Baltimore, he's doing a hunger strike to end the violence, which is pointless. And then they decided to do a 72-hour ceasefire over the weekend. And they called this the Nobody Kill Anybody Weekend. The Nobody Kill Anybody Weekend. Oh, man. Well, it didn't last very long. Do you know why? Because you can't just wish for it. You can't just call for it. The only thing that thugs and murderers understand is getting their asses kicked. This is the same kind of movement we see with the coexist bumper stickers. You ever seen those on a Prius? Coexist bumper stickers. If you just wish that the seven religious symbols on that bumper sticker could coexist, then they will. But unfortunately, there's at least one of them. Pretty big number of acts of terror annually, directly related to at least one of those faiths. In fact, 3,000 terror attacks every year attributed to one of those faiths that a large faction of them really don't want to coexist. And this is on the heels of the Give Peace a Chance movement. If you've ever had a bumper sticker on your car that said Give Peace a Chance, if you've ever thought that was the greatest Beatles song ever, you're an idiot, because you can't just give peace a chance. You can't say to Kim Jong-un, give peace a chance. They tried that during the Clinton administration when Madeleine Albright took Kim Jong-il, the dictator in charge of the country, a signed autographed basketball from Michael Jordan. How well did that work for us? This is the same kind of nonsensical BS that you can wish things to happen and they just don't. At least three people had been shot before the weekend ended, two of them dead. The hashtag Baltimore ceasefire weekend was spearheaded by Erica Bridgeford, who took to Facebook following the killings to assure everyone that the ceasefire was not over, that Nobody Kill Anybody weekend would continue through Sunday, even though people were getting shot. Here are some of her words. She's a dingbat. If you want to talk about how come we come from slaves who ran away, got killed, yet more slaves kept rising up, you are the voice of this movement. Okay? But the slavery thing wasn't black people killing black people. That's the only thing. She continued, if you understand that the two lives we lost to violence inspire us to hashtag vibrate even higher. No, that's what she says. Vibrate even higher. You are the voice of this movement. She went on to describe the perceptions that have been shifted over the weekend and the immeasurable hope that young people have given via hashtag Baltimore ceasefire. Really? Okay, sure. Baltimore is experiencing death and violence at record levels, and it all comes from just 4 years after adopting stringent gun controls via the Firearm Safety Act of 2013. That act banned high-capacity magazines, assault weapons, established a registration and fingerprint requirement for would-be handgun purchases. The criminal use of high-capacity magazines in Baltimore has risen since the ban on the devices. And the murder rate has gone through the ceiling. But don't worry about it. You can just wish it away. Just wish away the violence. Wish away the violence. I mentioned North Korea. It looks like, and listen, I'm not a foreign policy expert. Very few are. But it looks like the world is getting behind an economic boycott of North Korea that can really, really hurt them. You know, I certainly don't want to see a military action, but it may be necessary. We may have to bomb the snot out of them. Yeah, we may have to just bomb the snot out of them. And a lot of people are going to die if that happens. But it looks like some positives are happening. China is getting behind it. The UN is getting behind it. The communist dictatorship looks like $1 billion of its annual $3 billion export revenue could be lost. All right, one-third of their economy, their lousy economy, which basically is coal, this is going to hurt. And it's not going to hurt the people because the money's not getting to the people. The money's going to the government, the fat pig who is the leader of the country, and the nuclear weapons program. So this isn't going to hurt the people of North Korea. They're starving anyway. Here's a little bit from Nikki Haley, our UN ambassador, talking about what's going on with the world and boycotting of North Korea.
I mean, all of us should be concerned about what's happening right now. But I think the signs that we're seeing from North Korea, they're concerned back. Now they see the international community standing with one voice. China didn't pull off. Russia didn't pull off. And all of the Security Council and the international community said, that's enough. You've got to stop it. It's reckless. It's irresponsible. And the international community really laid down the groundwork of saying, we're not going to watch you do this anymore. Now North Korea has to respond. And yes, they're going to say, they're going to threaten, they're going to do all of these things, but we're not going to run scared from them.
Right. And I mean,
okay. This resolution could have been vetoed by China or Russia, but they didn't. I think it's because China and Russia are realizing the enormous impact that the United States has on their economies. And basically, you've got a president that they don't want to F with.
90% of the trade that North Korea has is with China. So that's why they were so important to this resolution. And what we saw was the fact that China did step up. These are hard-hitting sanctions that we're doing, over $1 billion out of their $3 billion export. But what was more important was China stepped up and said, we will follow through on these sanctions. We will make sure that we follow it. And they encouraged the international community to follow it. So I think China feels this. I mean, when I talked to the Chinese ambassador, when that missile test took off, they felt it in China. It was so close to their border that the ground shook.
Wow.
So the people of China now feel it, and they're disturbed enough to say that they now have to do their part. And now we have to just stay on them to make sure they do that.
Okay. We will see. Hopefully this will have the effect of stopping the nuclear arms program and knocking some sense into that fat little piggy. Philadelphia's tax on sugary drinks has made soda more expensive than beer in the city. This is such a colossal failure. Do you have any idea? Tax Foundation released a new study on the excise tax last week, finding that the 1.5 cent per ounce tax has fallen short of revenue projections, cost jobs, and has forced some Philadelphians to drive outside the city to buy groceries. And of course, it always works out that way. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Let me just quickly Google this. So when I find out how many ounces in a 2 liter bottle of soda, all right, a 2 liter is how many ounces? Okay. So a 2 liter bottle of soda has 67 ounces in it. All right. Now you take 67. Let me get my handy dandy calculator on my cell phone. 67 point times 1.5 equals, that's $1 for a 2 liter bottle of soda. Now, when 2 liter bottles, and I know this because I do all the shopping in my family, when 2 liter bottles are on sale, what are they generally on sale for? 99 cents, okay? 99 cents, maybe $1.29. Normally a 2 liter bottle, $1.69, $1.89. All right, so you've got a $1 sales tax. That is up to 100% the price of the product. You got a 44-ounce Big Gulp. You got a 46-ounce Big Gulp. 46-ounce. Let's look at it. Let's look what it's going to add to the price of your 99-cent Big Gulp. All right, let's go with 46 times 1.5 equals. On, let me clear it out again. I wasn't a math dude. 6 times 5 equals 69 cents. Big Gulp normally costs you $99, $1.29, maybe $1.59. You just added anywhere from 50 to 80% onto the price of that. Okay. Study from the Tax Foundation says that the tax is 24 times higher than the Pennsylvania tax rate on beer. Purchase of beer are also now less expensive than non-alcoholic beverages subject to the tax in the city. Okay. Empirical evidence from the 2012 journal article suggests that soda taxes can push consumers to alcohol, meaning it is likely the case that consumers are switching to alcoholic beverages as a result of the tax. That's just brilliant, right? Right? By the way, the paper aptly titled From Coke to Coors, dear God, hope never go to Coors, further shows that switching from soda to beer increases the total caloric intake, even as soda taxes are generally aimed at caloric reduction. The Tax Foundation points out that unlike most cities, Philadelphia passed the tax specifically to raise revenue, and it did, not to fight obesity. There's so many left-leaning administrations will raise taxes for the fact that they think the taxes are too low. Okay, in the Missouri, I lived close to Missouri. Tax on a pack of cigarettes, 17 cents. Missouri legislator wanted to pass, and they wanted to increase that sucker by like 400%. Because it was too low. That's the only reason. And they made up a program. It was early childhood development. They're gonna spend the money on early childhood development. So I said, clearly, if you don't start smoking again, if you've quit, or if you don't start smoking and you never have, you don't care about children. Right? The city even includes diet sodas in its tax as a way of raising money for pre-kindergarten programs. Again, early childhood development. The city, less than half of the $39 million collected since the tax went into effect on January 1st, has gone to education funding. A couple people on Fox News talking about this morning. One analyst, Brian Morgenstern, talking about the Philadelphia soda tax and what these taxes do.
It's ridiculous. This is a very bad plan because by its very design, the wheels just fall off the bus. What they've done is basically doubled the cost of soda. Because the purpose is to discourage people from buying soda because it's not good for your health. To make it palatable, they've tied it to a children's education program, which is supposed
early childhood development, kids. You can't argue with early childhood development.
To be funded by this tax. But the point of the tax, just like a cigarette tax, is to eventually not have to charge it because they don't want people to drink soda, which means then you have a huge new entitlement that goes unfunded.
Right.
This is the logic just crumbles on itself and gets sucked into a wormhole or something.
Or through a straw.
It doesn't work. This is a bad plan. trying to nanny state people and manage their behavior with this kind of minutia is a bad idea for the government. They should be focusing on higher priorities, like for example in Philadelphia, picking up the garbage or plowing the streets, which they've had problems with for decades.
Yeah, and that's what it is, and it ends up costing poor people more. You're talking about a product, even a diet soda. You can't have a diet soda. Gatorade, things like this. What they do is they find something, they demonize it, they castigate it, then they target it, then they tax it. Here is another analyst on Fox this morning, Jean Zeno, talking about the tax.
First of all, I think health is a very serious issue, and I think the city of Philadelphia is right to try to address it. I agree with Brian. This is not the way to do it, but let's be honest. Obesity in some of these communities, and soda is a huge component of that, the amount that young kids and adults and all of us...
And if it's not soda, it'll be something else. It's McDonald's. It's school lunches. Michelle Obama, the school lunches are making kids fat. So no. If the kids were eating three school lunches a day and they were getting fat, then you could blame school lunches. Although a lot of schools have had to take the place of parents to feed kids breakfast, to feed them lunch, feed them after school. So Michelle Obama converted the lunch program into something that sucked profoundly and ended up wasting more food than it saved, and kids went hungry.
Our drinking and consuming is a huge problem, not just for people individually, but for all of us collectively. We are not healthy in the United States. That is a fair thing for the city to try to address. The problem here is, as Brian mentioned, this is not a productive way to address it. So I think they need to go back to the drawing board and figure out, how do you address the issues of obesity in their community? This is not right. The way, because as you mentioned, these companies are not in the business of being benevolent. The city has to take more responsibility for this, and there are ways to do it. This is not one of them, but the goal is right.
Why should companies be responsible for the calories in something if somebody wants to drink it? There's a calorie label right there on the side of the container. People should know, after all of the education that's going on and all the propaganda that's going on, that 200 calories is quite a bit. Maybe there are quite a few calories in that 46, 54, 64 ounce Coca-Cola that you're buying at the convenience store. But unfortunately, people are too stupid to know otherwise. And so we have to, I guess, treat them like cattle. Isn't this kind of like treating them like cattle? We feed them. We regulate what they eat. We watch them. Make sure they're, in cattle, you want to fatten up. Here's a little bit more from Brian Morgenstern about another aspect of jacking up excise taxes on things like sugary beverages, and that is, of course, smuggling.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there are numerous cases of cigarette smuggling, of alcohol smuggling, things like that, where if one state's excise tax, which is at the distribution level, just like this tax, is much higher than the neighboring state, it happens all the time that people will go to another state, load up their truck, right, drive it into the other state, and bootleg it and sell it illegally and avoid the tax, so people will still get the product. Basically the businesses will suffer, or the consumers will pay the tax. There's no avoiding this, that either the tax is going to drive the business to other states, or it's going to, you know, just depress the natural progress of people buying that product. Now, I guess that's by design. But again, this is a locality trying to manage people's lives at a level which is offensive to a lot of people's sensibilities.
You know, there's a point you can only help people so much because they're too stupid. You know what I'm saying? Oh, man. One other thing I want to mention. This is kind of funny. I saw this on the UK Daily Mail. There's a new video on YouTube that talks about the popular foods and drinks that can kill you if you have too much of them. Would you like to hear how much of certain things will kill you if you take them in excess? 70 cups of coffee per day. 1 or 2 ground cherry pits. Did you know cherry pits have cyanide in them? 85 full-size chocolate bars. 13 shots of alcohol can kill you. 29 teaspoons of pepper. That'd be pleasant. 480 bananas can kill you. 10.5 cups of sugar at once will kill you. 25 green potatoes, 6 liters of water. Those are things that can kill you. 2 teaspoons of nutmeg. Did you know that? 2 teaspoons of nutmeg can kill you? Didn't know that, did you? All right. Well, guys, I want to thank you for joining me for this podcast today. I want to especially thank those of you who are joining on the Podcast Radio Network. Again, my name is Rob Carson. If you would like to download this podcast, please go to iTunes and do so. And just look for Rob Carson Show. All right. I'm also on YouTube, on TuneIn, on Audio Boom, on SoundCloud, and a bunch of other things. Oh, might as well mention while I'm doing this, and I'm not meaning to be distractive in any way, shape, or form. Also on Facebook at Rob Carson Show and on Twitter at Rob Carson. That's a hell of a lot to think about, right? Sorry about that. Just Google Rob Carson Show, okay? And if you like it, and if you want to write me personally, carsonontheradio@gmail.com. carsonontheradio@gmail.com. I want to thank Deplorables Radio for carrying the podcast on their Facebook page. The Deplorables for carrying it on their Facebook page. Do appreciate those. You guys are the best. And again, to the Podcast Radio Network, you can now expect to hear this show Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, right at 5 o'clock Central Standard Time, and soon to move Monday through Friday, all right? In the meantime, God bless. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again real soon.
Thanks for listening to The Rob Carson Show. Friend him on Facebook at Carson Show, on Twitter at Rob Carson, and on Instagram, I think Facebook and Twitter are enough for now. We'll see you soon.